He's going numb fast. He can't make his fingers work, can't thumb the trigger. The Magos tilts its head and blurts noise at him, and Wick sees himself reflected a dozen times in the shattered red crystals of its eyes. No rifle, no knife. Only the silver Aquila on the chain around his neck left.
"And so destiny is written,"
the Magos blares, so loud his ears ring.
"Only by 9.
"We'll see about that," Wick says. Half blind from pain and damn near dead, he thumbs the detonator trigger. The world turns sideways as the Magos is sent reeling by the explosion. Wick ends up on his back on the treadplate as the viewport cracks along its length, tectonic, like old ice underfoot. The Magos screams again, and the viewport blows out. There's a rush and a spin, and the world turns again. The Magos disappears into the void. Bits of glass rush past, droplets of blood. Wick's ears ring, and it sounds like howling. He hangs in the emptiness, waiting for the blackness to take him, with agony running knives over his body inside and out. A memory presses in from the edges of his misfiring mind. That day back home, he'd walked into the Black Lake to try to get the blood off his hands, to get rid of the knife he'd used. It wasn't supposed to go that way. The fight was only meant to go to first blood, just a way to get some extra coin for him and Raph and the others. But once he'd started fighting, he'd not been able to stop. Then Raph had to come and find him. He had to ask that damned question. "What have you done, Dav?" It wasn't supposed to go that way. But then Raph had pushed him, punched him, fought him. So Wick had fought back. But the knife was still in his hand, and then it was buried in Raph's chest. It wasn't supposed to go that way. Ord said that it's war that splinters a soul, makes it snap. Wick knows that's not the truth of it, that some things are made badly in the first place. They start off broken, weak. He waits for the void to take him, for the hounds to come and drag him to the after to be judged for all of his sins and the blood on his hands. He is ready for it, ready to answer for everything. But there is no howling. There are no balefire eyes or yawning jaws. Instead, Wick hears a voice ringing in his head, dim and distant.
"Kin,"
it rasps. Something Wick can't see tethers him, keeping him from that break in the armor glass, away from the void, away from death. Emergency measures kick in, shutters slam down, sealing the void out and allowing the core to repressurize. Wick falls hard onto the deck, and air forces its way back into his lungs. It burns badly. His whole body burns. He can't move or speak, or even blink. The bulkhead door grinds up slowly, and his kinfolk move in. Lydia Zane limps into view and falls to her knees beside him. She is bloodied and burned and looks for all the world like a devil sent to haunt him.
"I owed you a debt," Zane says, as unconsciousness comes to claim him. "Consider it paid."
Chapter 22. What Was Lost. Andron Fell wakes to the sound of screaming. The noise pulls him up and out of the dreams that cling to him, refusing to fade. Dreams of fire and smoke. Dreams of Severina Rain's voice, echoing, though he cannot see her for the fire. "I still have stories I owe you." Fell finds himself in a small, stark room with whitewashed walls. There is no door, just a Plaztec curtain that shifts and creases in the recycled air. The room smells of counterseptic and of blood. Fell hears screaming again, coming from beyond the curtain. He hears shouts in answer too, the snarl of tools and a repeating ping that sounds like Auspex returns, or a monitron tracker. Fell gets himself sat up, though it hurts to do it. Every breath burns. His eyes are heavy and his mind is slow.
it takes a moment to understand what he is seeing and hearing, for him to recognize that he is in a Medicaid ward, and to remember why. Fel looks down then at his right arm.
Hells, he says, and his voice is hoarse.
The augmetic replacement is made of silvered steel, and it goes almost all the way to his shoulder. His arm aches, though it shouldn't be able to, and the augmetic fingers twitch of their own accord like a misfire. It takes Fel 3 tries to make it stop. The servos inside the augmetic whine and burr. What happens starts to filter back in, then. The explosion. Bleeding a lot. Seeing rain in the aftermath. She had asked him what happened, and he hadn't been able to tell her. But Fel remembers now. The cause of the explosion was a contact charge, one that he failed to notice until it was too late. Whatever set the bomb had made a trigger of Laurie Gale's augmetic lens as a message and a punishment. Gale is dead, because she helped him. Fel feels all the heavier now. His augmetic hand twitches again, trying to close. He has to find Rain and tell her about Gale's death. Fel pulls the needles feeding him medication from under his skin. That takes 3 tries too, because his augmetic hand is clumsy and slow. Blood spatters on the tiled floor and the machines by the side of his cot start to ring urgently. Fel manages to get to his feet, but then the room starts turning around him and the walls run like wet paint, and he finds he can't see so well. When the orderlies come running and shouting, it sounds as though they are underwater. He can't fight them when they make him sit back down on the edge of the cot. Fel has to keep looking at his hands until everything stops spinning. That augmetic catches the light a lot. He'll have to do something about that.
What in the hells do you think you're doing?
Neria Lai sounds as though she is underwater too. It does nothing to make her sound less angry or tired. When Fel is able to look up, he sees that she looks it too. The chief Medicaid's grey eyes are bloodshot and hollow. Her lip is split and her scalp is grazed. She looks as though she's been fighting. Unease claws at Fel then.
I missed a fight, he says. What was it?
You need to rest, Lai says, with a shake of her head, or you'll miss a good deal more. Fel shakes his head and the room turns again. He has to put his good hand down on the cot frame.
Tell me what I missed, he says.
Lai puffs air through her cheeks.
High Command sent us after the Laxian shipyards, she says, and we took them back, but it cost us.
It's not just unease that Fel feels then. It's dread.
How much? He asks.
Your duskhounds are still standing, but not everyone was so lucky. Lai shakes her head. She blinks a couple of times as if her eyes are stinging.
We lost almost 40% across the regiment. Curran's son and damn near all of Gold.
Dol and his Fenwalkers. Half the wild folk. Ari, too. And Yuri Hale. Fel takes a breath, but it doesn't seem to help. All of those losses still feel like being drowned.
Gone to his light, he says softly.
Lai nods.
Aye, she replies. Evermore.
Then Lai takes a deep breath, and her no-nonsense frown returns.
Now rest, like I said. That arm won't settle until you do.
Fel shakes his head.
I can't, he says. I need to speak with the Commissar about what happened on Laxus Secundus. You have to call for her.
Lyth's face colours, and she shakes her head.
I can't, Captain, she says. Rain was killed in the shipyards too.
Everything goes distant in an instant, muffled like the shock after a flash charge. Fel's augmetic hand twitches again, and this time he doesn't try to stop it. He just lets it misfire while he tries his best to breathe, remembering Rain's voice in his dreams. I still have stories I owe you. Fel slams his augmetic hand against the rail of the cot and puts a dent in the metal. He wants it to hurt like it did before,
but now he can't feel a damn thing.
It will get easier, Lai says, once the injury isn't so new.
Fel knows that she means his arm, which is why he doesn't tell her that she's wrong and that it won't get easier, because he should have been there to fight with them. And he wasn't, because he owes Rain more than just stories. And now she is gone. Chapter 23 For the Bale Stars. Lord General Militant Alar Serek is in agony. Every step he takes down the marble and gilt hallway that leads to the main audience chamber on board Bale's Heart sends pain rolling outwards from the old scar that runs from his shoulder to his hip, from the mark he was given. Serek does not allow the pain to show on his face. He does not limp or falter, and his breathing remains steady, because in this he is practiced. He has been hiding the pain for over a decade, but not for much longer. Soon, he will have the machines. Soon, everything will change. Serek passes by the hanging portraits of those who came before him, the brightest and fiercest sons and daughters of the Bale Stars rendered in cracked and flaking oils. The paintings are cared for and tended, but even still the nameplates have tarnished and their eyes have faded, because no legacies left by the dead can outlast time. Serek stops at the end of the hallway, and the last of the portraits. His castellan stops in the same instant, keeping silent watch as Serek looks at the portrait of the last Lord General Militant to hold the rank before him. The artist captured Thema Rain well, her severity, her scars, and her keen eyes, even down to the way she held herself so straight, as if she could never be bowed, never broken. Long ago, Serek used to think that was what it took to hold dominion over the Bale Stars. Just standing straight and never breaking. But it is so much more than that. You must give everything. The roar of triumphal horns carries from the audience chamber ahead of Serek, and he turns away from Thema Rain and her keen eyes. He walks up the marble steps towards the audience chamber with that ever-present pain coursing through him. His castellan follows close and slow. A pair of attendants open the heavy curtains, and Serek steps out onto the dais to another kind of roar, coming from those arrayed before him. The audience chamber's gallery hall is arranged like a cathedral, lined with rows and rows of marble pews on either side of a central aisle. None of the pews are in use, because all present are standing. At the sides of the hall stand those who have come to bear witness. Syla and a select few of his Cavrone officer Carda, the Paxari naval delegation, and House Stormfall's lesser nobles, a number of Serek's own Lions of Bale. In the gallery rows stand those who are to be honoured. The remaining members of the 11th Antari Rifles are clad in their dress greys with hardly a thought for medals or glories. Instead, they are decorated with cuts and bruises and bandages. They all wear colour bands to mark their companies. Serek sees blue and grey, but very little in the way of gold. Serek has read the reports and the lists of the lost. Over half of the regiment's infantry were killed to claim the Laxian shipyards. It is a good deal of blood to spend, but like so many things, it is necessary. For the Crusade. For the Bale Stars. The other five members of High Command are already present, and already seated in their own finely made thrones on the curved dais. High King Araxes and Varys Drake bow their heads as Serek walks past them to where his throne waits. He does not sit. Instead, Serek draws his sword from the scabbard at his hip, because blades and words go hand in hand, because both can cut and kill in equal measure. Because that blade always reminds him of who he is, and why he has been chosen to stand above all others,
to shape the fate of the Baelstars and those who serve them. Serex Castellan waits at his back, and two more of his lions take guard positions on either side of him, their fur-trimmed cloaks stirring in the recycled air. On Serex's left, Io Karandi. On his right, Mateu Vostol. The pariah's presence is discomforting, but necessary.
On this day, a new legend has been written, Serex says. Like all legends, it has been written in blood, by the faithful and the loyal. By those willing to sacrifice everything in the name of something greater.
He looks out at the Antari. They are scarred and augmented and built strong from fighting. Despite all of that, they still seem transient, impermanent. Their lives will be short and bloody, and then they will be gone. Their names and their deeds will pass into memory, but even that will not last. Those who remember die, and their memories go with them. Death is an equalizer, which is why Serex has given so much to deny it. Because he is not equal. He is chosen. But he will allow them their moment of glory, impermanent as it may be.
The Baelstars see your sacrifice, he says. As do I. We see your bravery and your loyalty, and we recognize it.
He raises his hand and draws it across his chest, following the shape of the old wound given to him by Dektar the Ascended. The wound that put him on the path to change, and to the truth. It echoes even more fiercely then, a reminder of what he is, and what he needs to be, just like the sword he carries.
I confer the lion's honour on every soul that spent their blood at Laxus, he says. Both the living and the dead. On your captains, your sergeants, your infantry, and on your commissar.
There is a murmur then in the audience chamber as the doors at the far end open. The victory banners hanging above the central aisle stir, and four figures resolve with a scattering of Psyfrost. Two are stormtroopers, dressed in black carapace and armed with hell pistols. The third is the Antari Psyka, frail and wretched. Serex barely pays them heed, because his attention is on the fourth figure. The one dressed in commissariat black, with a peaked cap on her head, and her bolt pistol drawn.
Lord General Militant!
The voice rings out clear. That pitch and inflection, just like her damned sister, just like Thema, who Serex once knew and respected, who he emulated, until he realized that standing straight and remaining unbroken were not enough.
I refuse the lion's honour,
Severina Rain says, as she walks down the central aisle.
As do my regiment.
The chamber erupts with noise, as the other members of High Command react to Rain's words with indignant rage. Serex holds up his hand and they all fall silent.
Severina Rain, he says, with deliberate calm. I was told that you were dead.
She stares up at him from the gallery floor, unflinching. If it weren't for her intent, he could almost be proud of her.
A lie, Lord General,
Rain says.
But a necessary one, because I know the truth.
Serex could order her shot in that moment. But he doesn't, because he wants to see if she will have the strength to say it. He wants to see if she truly is Thema Rain's daughter.
And what truth is that?
He asks. Rain levels her pistol at him.
That you have embraced darkness and betrayed the Baelstar's crusade.
As soon as Rain says the words, the chamber erupts into clamour.
Sarek's lions raise their guns and point them at her. Not just the two on the dais. The guards around the edge of the chamber, too. On either side of her, Till and Jeth raise their own hell pistols in answer. Shouts and orders echo off the walls of the audience chamber, and Rain watches Sarek through the iron sights of her pistol as the Lord General Militant shakes his head.
I am so very disappointed in you, Severina Rain, Sarek says,
and the room falls silent again. He sheathes his sword and sits down in that throne of his as if nobody in the chamber has a gun leveled.
I gave you every chance, despite the failings of your blood, and now you stand here on a day meant to glory our victories, and you dare to level your weapon at me. You dare to accuse me of betraying the Baelstar's crusade.
He looks down at her from his throne, his blue eyes glittering like cut crystal.
I have given everything in the name of this crusade, he says coldly. Lower your weapons while you still can.
Rain knows that, at least, to be the truth. She does not look away from those unnatural eyes of his as she speaks again.
Including your soul, Rain says, just as coldly.
Sarek shakes his head.
You share your sister's failings, he says, and you will share her fate.
He gestures to his lions.
Get her out of my sight.
As the lions step down off the dais and onto the gallery floor, Rain hears the power cells of Till and Jeth's guns whine. Her finger tightens on the trigger of her pistol.
No!
The lions freeze at the sound of the voice. A voice Rain knows so very well. One that she wishes she had never doubted.
I want to hear it, says Lord Marshal Varys Drake. All of it.
Sarek turns to look at her.
Varys, he says warningly, do not be a fool.
Drake's eyes narrow in that approximation of a smile.
Allah,
she says, giving his forename as much deliberate weight as he did hers.
If you have committed no sins, then where is the harm? Surely Rain's words will only damn her further.
Unacceptable, says Julia Tavala.
The fleet commander's face is a snarl as she draws her sabre.
This is dissent, treason.
The drawing of Valor's sabre shatters decorum like a dropped glass, and within seconds High Command is divided between Sarek and Drake. Not just High Command, either. Every soul in the chamber. Caspar Sylar breaks the line and points his gilded ornate las pistol at Varys Drake.
You are a damn disgrace, the Caverone General snarls. This is not about Sarek. This is about your ambition.
Drake laughs.
Ambition, she says. Caspar, please. We both know who of the two of us has killed for the sake of ambition.
The sound Sylar makes in response is practically animal. Rain hears his pistol arm and charge.
You dare,
he roars.
You dare to question me, to question the Lord General Militant.
Nobody is above questioning, says Lucas Vander.
He draws his own pistol with his uninjured hand and puts it to Sylar's head.
Not for a commissar, Vander says. I would hear Rain's charges.
The chamber is held at stalemate, held like a breath. So Rain takes a step forwards into the teeth of the lions, and towards the throne and the king who made it for himself.
Lord General Militant Allar Sarek, she says. The charges against you are that of treason and corruption, of the use of psychers and heretical machines taken from the enemy to prolong your own life and your control over the crusade, of the abuse of military assets to acquire those machines.
Rain takes a breath.
You are accused of murder, of complicity in the deaths of hundreds, not least of Surgeon Major Isabella Luz, who you killed to conceal the greatest of your sins. The willing embrace of corruption.
She clicks the hololith projector she carries live and holds it up in her hand for all to see. The audio blares from the vox emitters Till and Jeth rigged to their kit.
He is different.
Isabella Luz's voice echoes in the silence of the chamber.
Changed. It is his eyes. They are so blue now.
And then there is the matter of the mark. Rain sees those blue eyes go wide. Serek begins to move. He opens his mouth to speak.
There is a scar. That is not a scar, Luz says. It is a fate mark.
There is a long, aching moment of silence, of shock and dismay, that rolls through the chamber like an ocean wave.
I will not stand for this, Serek says.
He gets to his feet.
Not from you or any other.
Is it true?
Drake asks. Her voice is hollow and full of rage. Serek snaps around to look at her.
Of course not, he says.
Prove it,
Drake says. Serek flinches. He takes a breath, and his hand goes to his chest as if it hurts him.
Throne. It is true, Drake says, softly.
You do not understand, Serek snarls. You cannot. I have given everything for this crusade. I have torn down cities, laid waste to armies. I have taken every wound and stayed standing, but it was still not enough. I would have lost everything I have given and everything that I have done. My crusade and my sector, all because of a weakness in my blood.
When he looks back at Rain, there is so much hatred in his crystal blue eyes.
I denied it, he says. I changed my fate for the sake of my Bale Stars, for the sake of my crusade.
No, Rain says. You denied it for the sake of no one but yourself.
And she fires her pistol. The boom of it echoes in the vaulted chamber, and Serek falls backwards into his gilded throne. Blood mists the air, and the chamber erupts with agonized noise and gunfire. Lydia Zane cannot help feeling the pull of sorrow watching Alar Serek fall and die. Not because he had not earned such a death. His sins more than fated it. Zane feels sorrow because a part of her believes that Serek's sins grew from noble intent, from momentary weakness, when remaining strong mattered most. Zane blinks away the sorrow as she throws herself through the melee that the audience chamber has become. Her bare feet slip on the bloodied floor. Her limbs ache and her lungs burn with every breath. Without her gifts, Zane is weak, limited. But she knows exactly who it is who has taken them, and she will have them back. She will use them for what is right. She will remain strong. The soul-blind lion is heavily built and tall with a blunted, war-scarred face. He is well-armored, and well-armed, too, with a pistol and rifle and a brutal combat blade. But the lion is distracted by Rain and Till and Jeth, and the execution of his master. He does not know that Zane is close until she has punched her darkwood dagger into his back, into the space between his carapace plates, into the space just beside his spine. The soul-blind lion cries out then and drops his pistol. Blood wells over Zane's hands as she pulls the blade free again. The lion twists around and drives his fist into her face. Zane falls onto her back, and the lion comes with her, leaning all of his weight on her chest.
He puts his big, blunt hands around her throat and squeezes. The absence of his soul worries at Zane, even as he chokes the life from her. Zane's false eyes stutter and dazzle. Her lungs burn, and over the ringing in her ears she hears him speak.
"You're nothing without your magic's witch," he snarls.
These words make Zane's heart stir, even as it aches and struggles and thunders in her ears, and she screams through her teeth and punches the darkwood blade into his left eye. The lion lets her go, moaning shapelessly with the blade buried so deep. He rolls clear of Zane and seizes and shakes and dies slowly. Slowly enough for Zane's voice to return to her.
"Even without my magics, I am still Antari," she rasps, "and that is enough."
The audience chamber is a war zone. All around Rain, the Lions of Bale advance, firing into the crowd. The Antari surge forwards and fight back, even though they are unarmed. Juna Keen knocks one of Serek's lions to the ground with a heavy punch from her augmetic arm, while Sail Devry fires a stolen pistol, defending her. On the dais, the remaining five members of High Command are intent on killing one another. Varys Drake is taking cover behind her ornate gilded throne, trading fire with Lord Castellan and Caradhras. General Primary Husal is locked in a duel of sabres with Julietta Valar. High King Araxes is crawling along the marble to escape danger, his fine robes tattered and spattered with blood.
"Traitor!"
Rain turns at the sound of Caspar Sylar's voice as he fires on her with his ornate pistol. The high-yield las round impacts against Rain's chestplate, winding her and knocking out her aim. Before Sylar can fire again, a loud boom splits the air, and Sylar falls messily onto the marble floor, executed by Lucas Vander.
"Rain!" he shouts over the noise. "The Castellan!"
Serek's slaved automaton steps down off the dais with a heavy thud. Crimson lights glow from within its faceplate as it turns its domed head towards Rain. She raises her pistol and fires three times as it moves inexorably towards her. The bolt rounds put craters in its metallic hide, but the Castellan keeps coming, with smoke trailing from its armor and lightning crackling around its heavy fists. Rain takes a step backwards and fires again. That shot shatters the Castellan's faceplate. Till and Jeth chase her gunfire with their own high-powered lasfire. The Castellan blares machine noise and staggers, blinded. Rain ducks away as it swings for her, crashing its powered fist against the floor and powdering the marble. She draws her sabre. Evenfall is made for endings, and it sings as Rain splits the Castellan's armor with it, cutting a deep groove up the front of the automaton's chest and its domed head, sending sparks and smoke into the air. The power fields on the automaton's fists flicker and die, but it still rears up again, blaring static and shedding sparks and shaking the marble with its ponderous, inexorable tread. It raises its massive fists again. And then the Castellan automaton crumples and folds and bends and ruptures, catching fire as it dies. The automaton falls forwards and hits the marble with a thunderous crack, still burning, felled like a tree. Lydia Zane falls to her knees beside Rain. The Antari Psyker is bloodied and bruised, panting like a hunted animal.
"It is not over," she rasps, and points to the dais.
A spear of light lances up from Serek's gilded throne, stealing Rain's vision for a split second. When her sight returns, Alar Serek is on his feet once again. His white tunic is painted red with blood, and his arctic eyes no longer remain. Blue fire burns in their place. There is a mournful roar around Rain from every soul in the chamber. She hears cries of chaos, of traitor, and of the Antari word that means sent from the hells, as they all recognize Serek for what he has become.
"Heretic," Rain says,
and she points her pistol at Serik and pulls the trigger. The others all fire on him too, everyone who can. Light blooms on the dais a second time from lasfire and detonating pistol rounds, but when it clears, Serik still stands. The blue fire in his eyes burns all the brighter.
Enough, he says.
And everyone in the chamber around Rain freezes. Silence falls like a shroud as Serik descends to the gallery floor with his saber drawn. It trails splinters of darkness that look for all the world like feathers. He moves for Rain, almost too quickly to see, and she barely turns aside his sword with her own.
You look at me with such hate, he says,
his voice a twinned echo of the one she knew.
Because you are a monster, Rain snarls.
She turns his sword aside again and brings Evenfall around in a glittering arc. It is as fast as she has ever moved, fast enough to cut him. Evenfall's powered blade draws a thin red line across Serik's sword arm. Black blood sprays into the air. Rain catches the scent of death as Serik bellows and attacks again. Rain parries, but it rattles her arm so numb that she cannot catch his next strike, the one that plunges straight through her armor and into her chest. She loses her grip on her saber and her pistol. They clatter to the floor beside her as Serik kicks her onto her back. He puts his boot on her chest, and Rain's vision dazzles.
I am not a monster, Serik says. I am what is necessary. In the decades since Steadfast, we have reclaimed more worlds than in the first 30 years of the Crusade combined. We have felled tyrants and toppled citadels, but our enemies are changing, and so too must we. Only through change can we endure.
No, Rain manages to say. We endure through faith. We endure through will and great sacrifice in the God Emperor's name.
Serik shakes his head.
The God Emperor, he says coldly. I dedicated my life to service in his name. I fought and bled and killed for him. But when my body failed me and I looked to him for salvation, he turned his golden eyes elsewhere. After all I had done.
Because he does not deal in mercy, Rain says. To seek it is weakness.
Weakness is limiting yourself, Serik says. Weakness is knowing that great power lies within your reach and failing to use it. With those machines, I could change everything, Severina. I could reverse the massacre at Chorus. I could undo the shattered years. I could twist the ropes of fate around the Nine and unmake them. I could restore the Baelstars, edge to edge, every injustice undone. It is not too late.
The balefire in Serik's eyes flickers, and he extends his hand to her.
I can spare you. I can spare everyone.
For an instant, Rain thinks of it, of the unwriting of all those wars, and the blood it would spare. She thinks too of Lucia, of what it would mean to be able to bring back her sister, and to undo that particular injustice. To unsay all of those terrible things that she said, and to be made whole again. But then Rain thinks too of what Lucia said those years ago,
on the platform over Gloam's angry ocean. They wanted to build a new world, and poison seemed a small price to pay. And she knows that no matter the reward, poison is always too much to pay. With incredible, blinding effort, Rain reaches out and grabs her bolt pistol, raises, and fires it. Bloody mist scatters across her as Serek staggers backwards, bleeding anew from that old wound of his, bleeding black. His hold on the others breaks, and they right themselves and rally and fire upon him. The hail of lasfire pushes him backwards as Antari hands pull Rain back to her feet, keen and devry. Rain's blood drips onto the marble as she advances on Serek and raises her pistol again. The Antari follow her, the Kavrone too, Vanda and the lions that are left standing. Serek is pushed back against the edge of the dais by the weight of lasfire and by Lydia Zane. The Psyker bleeds anew through her bandages as she forces the monster that was once Alar Serek to his knees, burned and bleeding and trailing smoke.
Lord General, Militant Alar Serek, Rain says between ragged breaths. I find you in dereliction of your duty to the Bale Stars Crusade and to our Holy Lord on Terra. The punishment for this is death.
Serek looks up at her then, and for a moment his eyes are not lit by balefire. They do not look like cut crystal. They are a deeper shade of blue, like a twilight sky. They are his own.
I just wanted to live, Serek says softly. I was afraid. Angry.
Rain shakes her head. There is fear in everyone, she says, and anger. It is what we choose to do in the face of it that damns or defines us. Serek nods, slowly.
Those are good words, Severina Rain, he says in his odd, echoing voice. Words to die by.
And then Rain pulls the trigger, and her pistol barks, and Alar Serek does die. Truly this time. The Wrath Unending. Before. Rain calls only for a chosen few, those that she has the best measure of, whose responses she can best predict and direct. The first is Juna Keen. The Antari general is a necessity. Without her, the plan will not work. Rain calls for the three captains, too, to help her enact it. Yuri Hale, Sail Devry, and Karen Sun. The last of Fel's Duskhounds and Nerea Lai. Last of all, Rain sends for Lydia Zane, because the plan will not work without her either, and because there is little point in trying to keep secrets from a Psyker. The meeting takes place in a disused storage chamber in the lower decks of the Wrath Unending during their warp transit towards the Laxian shipyards. Old wounds from the Wrath's many fleet engagements mar the walls and deck. The damage has been repaired, but not concealed. Like the Antari, it wears its scars openly.
This feels like trouble, Commissar, Hale says.
He sits on one of the old crates beside Devry. Karen's son stays on his feet, with his arms folded. I am inclined to agree, Captain, Juna Keen says. What are we doing down here, Rain? The Antari general is seated too, on another of the crates. Keen makes a show of looking at ease, that Rain can see suspicion in her grey eyes.
You found the manticore, Zane says, absently. That is why we are here.
The Psyker is sitting with her legs crossed beneath her on the treadplate of the floor. Like always when they are aboard ship, she is barefoot. Keen frowns.
Manticore, she says. What are you talking about? This is what the captain spoke of, isn't it? Till asks. What he couldn't tell me?
It is what he bled for,
Rain says. What so many have died for. She takes out the data key from the pocket of her greatcoat and loads it into a portable hololith projector which she places on the floor. It is the truth, she says. And then she spools up Isabella Luz's records and lets them play. It is no easier to watch it a second time, even after speaking with Serek and seeing the truth of it in his face. Rain wants to cry out all over again. The Antari are silent throughout, and for what seems a long time afterwards, too. All Rain can hear is the burn of the Roth's engines.
He is the Manticore, Zane says, softly. He who was afraid to die, so he twisted free of the noose.
Serek, Keen says. This cannot be true. The general gets to her feet as if she wants to leave, but goes nowhere. She just stands, tensed like a threatened animal. Neri Alai thumps her fist against the crate she is sitting on and curses softly in Antari. Rain catches the phrase Oathbreaker.
Serek killed Dektar the Ascended,
Hale says, with his head in his hands.
He liberated Steadfast and Paxar and saved us from death in the Forges. He is the Crusade.
Karen's son says nothing, but Rain sees a tear roll down his blunted, scarred face. He doesn't try to brush it away.
It can't be, Devry says. It just can't.
Cassia Till shakes her head. She looks resigned.
Of course it can, she says in a hollow voice. Fate marks don't lie. Serek was broken by the threat of death.
And he made a choice that changed him, Jeth says.
The man that Serek once was is dead, Rain says. He died on Steadfast all of those years ago. He died the moment he made that choice. She pulls the data key and Isabella Luz's frozen face disappears. Serek means for me to die at the shipyards, she says. He is willing to sentence the entire regiment to death if needs be, to keep his secret. She looks at the Antari.
But we will not die. We will emerge from the Laxian shipyards victorious, and then we will expose him for what he truly is.
He will come for you,
Zane says. The Psyker speaks with cold certainty.
The moment he learns that you live, he will hunt you. He cannot afford to stop.
Rain nods. She hasn't stopped thinking about it since leaving the Bale's heart.
I know, she says. That is why he must believe me dead.
And once you're dead?
Karen's son asks.
What then?
Serek is bound by the expectations of the rest of High Command, Rain says. He could not call an order like that and let victory pass without a ceremony to mark it. He will look upon it as a display of power, a chance to show anybody left who might challenge him what happens to those who do. Serek thinks himself above reproach, and that in itself is another advantage.
Nobody is above reproach, Keen says, nor beyond the reach of death and judgment.
Just killing Serek is not enough, Rain says. He has to be exposed, torn down in front of everyone else. It is not enough to cut out the source of the rot. Everything touched by it must be removed too.
Rain takes a breath.
But I cannot do this alone, she says. So I am asking you to stand with me.
There is a moment of silence amongst the Antari. Rain knows they are waiting for their general to speak. Juna Keen raises her augmetic arm and turns her hand to look at it.
I earn this arm fighting on quarter in Serek's name, hoping that I could prove myself as strong as he was on Steadfast.
Keen exhales a slow breath and extends her hand. Rain grips Juna Keen's hand, and the general claps her on the shoulder.
We will stand with you, Severina Rain,
she says. Loyalty, before the threat of death.
For the Bale Stars, Rain says. For the Emperor.
The Antari all speak those last three words with her. Keen lets go of Rain's hand. She nods her head and gestures to her captains.
We have much to do, she says, so let's get to it.
Everyone leaves the room then, save for Cassia Till. Rain knows what Till is going to say before she speaks.
You'll want this keeping from the captain, she says.
Rain hasn't stopped thinking about that since leaving the Bale's Heart either, and she knows her answer. It's just the saying of it.
He cannot know, she says. Not any of it.
Till's face clouds, but she nods her head.
Operational risk, Commissar. I understand.
Rain nods, though it's not just about operational risk. She trusts Andron Fell with her life. She will not tell him her plan, because she knows that he will try to aid her when he can't, that he'll likely get himself killed in the bargain. Rain knows what it will do to him to think her dead, but it cannot change her answer. All that Rain can do is hope that she is still standing at the end of all of this to ask for his forgiveness. Chapter 24. An Empty Throne. Severina Rain stands in the audience chamber aboard the Bale's Heart. The blood has been cleaned from the marble, but the damage from gunfire remains. From the killing shot she fired on Serek. The damage is deep. Cracks spread through the stone from it, long and dark. The damage done to Rain runs deep, too. Every movement pulls at the stitching and cautery in her chest. Her broken ribs ache, as does the gunshot wound she took from Sylar. But she is still standing. She endures. Just like marble and the Bale's Heart. Just like the Crusade.
It will stay like this.
Rain turns at the sound of Varys Drake's voice. The Lord Marshal has one of her arms bound in a sling, and she leans on a finely made cane as she approaches Rain. With her are General Primary Husal of Gol and High King Araxes. They too are injured, exhausted. They are all that remains of Balestar's High Command. Drake puts out her uninjured arm and brushes her fingertips across the damaged marble.
To repair the damage would be to forget, Drake says. And we must never forget.
Rain nods.
But we must rebuild, Drake says. The Crusade must endure. In order for that to happen, the truth about Serek cannot be allowed to spread. It would destroy morale, destroy everything we have given so much to save.
Rain feels hollow.
So he is to be given a hero's death, she says.
Drake nods.
And those who know the truth, Rain says coldly, will they be offered the same?
High King Araxes chuckles at that.
You were right about her, Varys, he says. She is much like Thema.
Rain glares at him. Drake waves her hand before she can speak.
We have given much thought to it, Drake says. Any complicit in Serek's actions will be sentenced, but there will be no more deaths for the loyal. You and your Antari have already paid dearly enough.
Drake puts her hand on Rain's shoulder, and for a moment, Rain feels as though she could be a child again, standing in the grand hall decorated in her mother's name. But this day is different. This hall is decorated with damage, and the Bale Stars have lost more than just one hero.
You dragged Serek into the light through sheer will and devotion, Drake says. And those things should never be wasted. He will continue to serve, as your regiment will.
her hand falls away again.
After all, she says, we still have a crusade to fight. In the Emperor's name.
Rain nods. She feels tears threaten at the corners of her eyes, from exhaustion and agony. But most of all, from pride.
In the Emperor's name, she says.
Steadfast. After. Severina Rain stands alone in the vast dark shadow of the hero's mount and watches the engraving servitor slowly cut her sister's name into the marble. She is dressed in plain training clothes and not her uniform. She does not carry her weapons. In this, she is here as a sister, as a good heart and nothing more. Devotional candles flicker in the cold wind as the blade cuts the shapes of Lucia's name. It reminds Rain of doing the same to the timepiece, all those years ago, of trying to let go. Only this time, she feels as though she actually can. She knows that Fel is there before she catches sight of him out of the corner of her eye. He doesn't say a thing, just stands beside her as the servitor cuts the name and as dust from the marble falls like snow and those candles continue to flicker. Then it is done, and the servitor folds back its arms and moves along the mount. It will never be short of names to carve. Rain takes the timepiece from her pocket and looks at it, at the crack in the face, and the way the case has buckled and tarnished, at the name carved into the brass. She feels the steady ticking against her palm, soft and even, like a heartbeat. Then Rain closes her hand around it and walks over to the wall. She puts the timepiece down amongst the candles and picks and letters for the lost, then runs her thumb over the case one last time, before stepping back. That's it done, she says, and the words apply to so many things. It will be strange to go and leave it here. To leave her here. Think of it not as leaving her, but as letting her rest, Fel says. Rain nods. Her eyes sting, as if from the wind. It's good to have you back, she says. To have you here, for this. I wouldn't have been anywhere else, he says. I will stand with you, always. Until the end. Rain turns to look at him. Fel is without his carapace armor, just dressed in plain fatigues with the sleeves rolled back. The metal of his augmatic arm reflects the candlelight. Let me see, she says. He offers her his hand, and she takes hold of it in her own. The augmatic is a good one, well made and strong, but Rain feels grief over it nonetheless. Guilt. It's a lot to lose, she says, and she lets go. Fel shrugs his shoulders. There's a softening in his grey eyes. I can think of much worse things, he says. I am sorry for keeping the truth from you, Rain says. You don't need to apologize for doing what's right, he says, or for being strong enough to do it. Rain can't think of how to answer that. Instead, she reaches out and touches his face, tracing the shape of that old scar that runs down his cheek to his jawline. I have never told you exactly what you mean to me, she says. He smiles, just a little, and then puts out his hand and brushes her hair back, away from her face. Yes, you have, he says softly. And in that moment, they aren't soldiers. They aren't serving. She is not an officer, and neither is he. They are just souls. A crusade to fight. On board the Pyre's Light, The Antari induct their new blood, swear them into squads and give them their marks and their myths. Rain hears it and sees it as she makes her way back to her posted quarters. Later, the Antari will fight for the joy of it, as they always do on the nights before a deployment, because that is the way of things. Even though Rain can never partake in that, or any of their other rites, she finds it a comfort. There is value in things that endure despite hardship. Rain lets herself into her quarters, and the overhead lumens activate to reveal two figures waiting for her. Before she can process who it is, she pulls her pistol and points it.
"Come now, Severina," says Lord Marshal Verus Drake. "We are all friends here."
Rain lowers her pistol and holsters it, but she doesn't lower her guard, because Drake's words aren't entirely true. Because the other person in the room is Lucas Vander.
"Rain,"
he says, in that same cold way he always does, though there is less disdain in it than there was once, than there was before Serek. Rain pulls the bulkhead door closed behind her and spins the lock.
"To what do I owe this visit?" she asks.
Drake gets up from the folding chair she is sitting on. She has to lean on her cane to do it, because the damage done during the fight on the Bale's Heart could not be entirely undone.
"I will be blunt," Drake says, as if Rain would ever expect differently from her. "High command is weak. The command echelons are a mess. We have never been more vulnerable."
Rain narrows her eyes.
"But that is not why you are here," she says. "And it is certainly not why he is here."
"In that you are correct," Vander says. "And believe me, I am not here by choice either."
Drake gives him a withering look.
"Enough, Lucas," she says. "I am here because I do not believe the corruption within the Crusade died with Alar Serik. Because I need watchful eyes and faithful hearts. I need those that I can trust to seek it out."
Rain frowns. "We are already tasked with guarding the souls of our regiments," she says. "We will not fail in that."
"Of course," Drake says. "But I need you to guard more than just the souls of your regiments. I need you to do so for the Crusade. And I want you to begin with this."
She takes something out of the pocket of her robe and places it in Rain's hand. Something that Rain has not seen since she gave it to Mardan Tula, what seems like a lifetime ago. An auditory damper disc that Tula could not tell her the origin of. Not because he did not know, but because it was beyond classified.
"And if I refuse?" Rain asks.
"We both know that you won't."
"How can you be sure?" Rain asks.
"Because I know you, Severina Rain. Because you are not the kind to refuse a duty or back down from a trial."
Drake smiles then. Not that narrowing of her eyes, but a real smile.
"Because you are a commissar," she says.
That was Honorbound by Rachel Harrison, narrated by Nicolette Chin. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2020.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.